Hello and welcome to our broadcast. We're going to be looking at the man called James. Why did God choose him? We'll have a look at it. Stay tuned. Today we're going to look at the life of James. He was part of the inner circle. He was the elder brother of John. His father's name was Zebedee. His mother's name was Salome. There's James, John, and Peter, and Andrew. They were working together in the fishing industry with Zebedee. They left all to follow Jesus. James is one of the two that is called the Sons of Thunder in the Bible, and he's the first of the 12 to be martyred. Now, we read about him in Matthew chapter 10, verse number 2, where we read, "Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother." So here we have James. It says that in verse 18 of chapter 4, "And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he saith unto them, Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And they straightway left their nets and followed him. And going on from thence, he saw other two brethren, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in a ship with Zebedee their father, mending their nets. And he called them, and immediately they left all, and they followed him." He said, "Now I will make you to become fishers of men." I was reading a little parable the other day, a parable of a lighthouse, it's called. This is how it goes. It says, "On a dangerous sea coast where shipwrecks often occur, there was once a little crude life-saving station. The building was just a hut, and there was only one boat, but the few devoted members kept a constant watch over the sea, and with no thought for themselves, they went out day or night, tirelessly searching for the lost. Many lives were saved by this wonderful little station, so that it became famous, and some of those who were saved and various others in the surrounding area wanted to become associated with the station and give their time and money and effort for support of this great work. Well, new boats were bought and new crews were trained, and the little life station grew. Well, some of the new members of the life-saving station were unhappy that the building was so crude and so poorly equipped. They felt that a more comfortable place should be provided as the first refuge of those saved from the sea. So they replaced the emergency cot with beds and put better furniture in a bigger building, and now the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for its members. And they redecorated it beautifully and furnished it as a sort of a club. Well, less of the members were now interested in going to sea on life-saving missions, so they hired lifeboat crews to do the work. The mission of the life-saving station was still given with lip service, but most of them were too busy or lacked the necessary commitment to take part in the life-saving activities personally. Well, about this time, a large ship was wrecked off the coast, and the hired crews brought in the boatloads of cold, wet, and half-drowned people. Well, some of them were dirty and sick, and some of them had black skin, and some of them spoke a strange language, and the beautiful new club was considerably messed up. So the property committee, they decided they had to build a shower house outside the club where victims of shipwrecks could be cleaned up before bringing them inside. At the next meeting, there was a split in the club membership. Most of the membership wanted to stop the club-saving activities as being unpleasant and a hindrance to the normal life pattern of the club. Well, some of the members insisted that the life-saving station was their primary purpose and pointed out that they were still called the life-saving station. But they were finally voted down and told that if they wanted to save the life of all those various kinds of people who were shipwrecked in the waters, they could begin their own life-saving station down the coast, which they did. And as years passed by, the new life-saving station experienced the same changes that occurred in the old one. They evolved into a club, and yet another life-saving station was founded. And if you visit the seacoast today, you will find a number of exclusive clubs along that shore. Oh, yeah, shipwrecks are still frequent in those places. The only difference is now the people drowned. Well, what a sad story. But that's the story of how things go, isn't it? We start off and we want to reach the lost, and then we become a nice little club where we can just sit around and do nothing. Jesus said, "Follow me, and I will make you to become fishers of men." Well, we read in Luke 9:51, it came to pass, when the time was come that he should be received up, Jesus steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. Now, we're going to look at something that James, we're talking about James here, what he saw. And Jesus sent messengers before their face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. And they did not receive him, because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, now notice it says that James and John saw this, and they said, "Lord, wilt thou command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elijah did?" Now let's consider what was happening here. It says back here in verse 51, the time was come that he should be received up. That is, he is going to go from Galilee, he's going down into Jerusalem, he is going into the area of his enemies who are going to crucify him and put him on a cross. The time has come. Well, it says he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. They're not going to keep him from the cross. For this purpose he came into the world. Well, they're going to have to travel down through that area of Samaria, and so it's about a 3-day trip. And he sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. Now, keep in mind that back in John chapter 4, Jesus had come to Samaria, you remember? And many of them were saved. Many of them believed in Jesus Christ as a result of him being there. And so we see that they were beginning to at least organize some churches at that time, because it says in Acts chapter 9, after Paul got saved, then those churches in Samaria had rest. And so, as we've said before, if there were no churches there, how did they have rest? They were obviously there. They didn't get organized till later on when Paul told them how to do it. However, they didn't just win a bunch of people to the Lord in Samaria and then say, "Well, I hope you make it," till sometimes in the middle of Acts we start churches. No, they were obviously meeting together, and the Bible makes that very plain. Well, we need a place to stay, and surely they're going to do that for the Lord as he comes down through their area again. What does it say here? But they did not receive him, because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. Now, keep in mind, it's been a couple of years past here since John chapter 4, when these people had been saved. And so they said, "Well, you're going to Jerusalem?" No. Now, you remember the argument that the woman at the well had with Jesus, and she said, "Now, we worship here on this mountain, and we have our own temple, and you have your temple over there in Jerusalem, and you say that's where we ought to worship." Well, you see, even though these people had now become Christians and they were now starting churches, it's hard to get rid of that old traditional stuff. It's hard to get rid of that false doctrine that we've been taught before that and all that baggage. And so they came there to set up to see, "Well, can we stay here at your place?" "No, you're going to Jerusalem. Forget it. We don't want anything to do with you." And so these are Christians. And it says, well, James and John, this is why Jesus called them sons of thunder. They said, "Should we call fire down from heaven and destroy them?" Verse 55, Jesus turned and rebuked them and said, "You know not what manner of spirit you're of, for the Son of Man is not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them." And they went to another village. And that's simply put, let's just go to another village. We'll go somewhere where they will receive us. Well, there's quite a few lessons in this little verse here in number 55. First, it says he turned and rebuked them. Who did he rebuke? He rebuked James and John. Now, keep in mind, you remember when Peter said to Jesus, "You're not going to go to the cross." Jesus rebuked him. He said, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of man." What was Peter's problem? Well, he wanted a throne. He wanted to get the Romans kicked out, and Jesus was going to take over, and they were going to have their thrones, all 12 of them. And that's what he wanted. And Jesus said, "No, you don't understand. If I don't go to the cross, then you're not, and nobody's getting saved." And he said, he rebuked him openly. Well, now that was Peter. Who do we have here? James and John. Who are these three men? The inner circle. Jesus openly rebuked all three of those on the inner circle. Now, the Bible says in 1 and 2 Timothy there on how things ought to be done in a church, he says, reprove and rebuke. Oh, yeah, you do much rebuking today, and you'll find your church empty out pretty fast. Don't you be rebuking us. Well, Jesus rebuked the inner circle, and if Peter, James, and John, those who were the closest to Jesus, needed some rebuke, then I think maybe once in a while we need it too. To this inner circle, he said, "Ye know not what manner of spirit you're of." And I wonder sometimes if we really know what manner of spirit we are. We can tell when we're rebuked. We can tell how we respond. Well, how did James and John respond? "Well, let's call down fire from heaven and consume them." No, he said, "No, that's not the way you act. You know not what manner of spirit you're of." And he said unto them, "Let's just go to another village." And they did. Well, let's keep in mind that this is 3.5 years after they'd been traveling with Jesus. You would have thought they'd learn more by this time, but they're slow learners, the inner circle, that is. And, you know, we just need to look in the mirror sometimes and say, I think we're slow learners too. Now, we find that James was the first of all of these apostles to be martyred. It says in Acts 12:1, "Now about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hand to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword." Well, we'll find that those who come against God and God's people lose everything. You can go all the way back to Pharaoh, where he started. He lost everything. Every leader that fought against God paid dearly for it. And when God's leaders in Israel, go back to and read 1 Kings chapter 14 and see how one of those leaders suffered for it. You cannot go against God and not pay a price for it. And God is no respecter of persons, whether those are Romans or whether those are Gentiles or whether those were Israelites or whether we call ourselves Christians today. We cannot rebel against God and not pay for it. Well, we read here in verse number 3, "And because he saw it pleased the Jews," and that's what Herod wanted to do. He wanted to keep those Jews content. "It pleased the Jews," he proceeded further, "to take Peter also." And it says, "Then were the days of unleavened bread." Now, the crowds were in there. It's a Passover time, and the crowds, millions of people coming into Jerusalem there. And Herod didn't, you know, he wanted to focus on him when he killed Peter because he wanted to get those Jews to like him. And so he's going to wait until after the days of unleavened bread. And so he's going to have Peter put to death. Well, in Acts chapter 12, verse 22, we'll figure out what happened with Herod. The Bible says that God struck him and he was eaten with worms. Yeah, we read in Acts 12:21, "And upon a set day Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, It is the voice of a god and not of the man." Well, he's pleasing those Jews, isn't he? "And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost." Well, it began with Pharaoh. He went against God. He paid severely for it. Go through the Old Testament, and you'll find time after time after time after time when leaders went against God, they paid severely for it. And they will today, too, by the way. Well, here we have Herod. He thought he was a great man. He's going to get those Jews on his side. He's going to kill James, and he did. And he thought he was going to kill Peter, except he got out. He had him wait till after the Passover. And, well, you know the story. The angel came and opened the gates, and Peter's, you know, Peter was sound asleep at that time in the middle of the night. Why was he sleeping? Well, I used to say he thought he was going to die tomorrow. It was his last chance to sleep. You don't sleep when you go to heaven. No, that wasn't the reason. The reason was in John chapter 21, Jesus had told Peter how he was going to die, and this wasn't it. And so he just believed him. He said, "No, I'm not going to die tomorrow. I don't know how it'll work out, but it will work out." And he went to sleep. You can trust the Lord, you can sleep at night. Well, Herod, it didn't look too good when those worms were crawling up his arms and legs and eating them alive. But you're going to go against God, you're going to pay the price. Be careful there. Be not deceived. God is not mocked.